Welcome to Jaded YA Reads, a YA read-aloud podcast for teens, tweens, and adults, brought to you by the Wells Public Library. This season, we'll be reading The Inheritance Games by Jennifer Lynn Barnes, with permissions from Little, Brown, and Company. Chapter 44. I didn't process the magnitude of what I'd done until I was safely inside Hawthorne House. I told the press that I have the answers they want. It was the first time I'd spoken to them. The first real footage anyone had of me, and I'd lied through my teeth. Oren was right. Elisa was going to kill me. I found Libby in the kitchen, surrounded by cupcakes. Literally hundreds of them. If she'd been an apology baker back home, the addition of an industrial-grade kitchen with the triple ovens had basically taken her nuclear. Libby? I approached her cautiously. Do you think I should go for red velvet or salted caramel next? Libby was holding an icing bag with both hands. Blue hair had escaped her ponytail and was matted to her face. She wouldn't meet my eyes. She's been at it for hours, Nash told me. He stood leaning back against the stainless steel refrigerator, his thumbs hooked through the belt loops of his well-worn jeans. Her phone's been going off for just as long. Don't talk about me like I'm not here. Libby looked up from the cupcakes she was icing to narrow her eyes at Nash. Yes, ma'am, Nash smiled, wide and slow. I wondered how long he'd been with her. Why he'd been with her. Drake is gone, I told Libby, hoping Nash would take that as his cue that he wasn't needed here. I took care of it. I'm supposed to take care of you. Libby shoved her hair out of her face. Stop looking at me like that, Avery. I'm not going to break. Of course not, darling, Nash said, from his spot leaning against the fridge. You... Libby looked up at him, a spark of annoyance lighting her eyes. You shut up. I'd never heard Libby tell someone to shut up in her life, but at least she didn't sound fragile or hurt or in any danger of texting Drake back. I thought about Elisa saying that Nash Hawthorne had a savior complex. Shutting up now. Nash picked up a cupcake and took a bite out of it like it was an apple. For what it's worth, I vote for red velvet next. Libby turned back to me. Salted caramel it is. Chapter 45. That night, when Elisa called me to read me the I can't do my job if you won't let me riot act, she didn't allow me to get in a word edgewise. After she'd said a terse goodbye, which seemed to promise more retribution to come, I sat down at my computer. How bad is it? I said out loud. The answer, it turned out, was a leading story on every news site bad. Hawthorne heiress keeping secrets. What does Avery Grahams know? I barely recognized myself in the pictures the paparazzi had taken. The girl in the photos was pretty and full of righteous fury. She looked as arrogant and dangerous as a Hawthorne. I didn't feel like that girl. I fully expected to get a text from Max, demanding to know what was going on, but even when I messaged her, she didn't message back. I went to close my laptop, but then stopped, because I remembered telling Max that the reason I had no idea what happened to Emily was that Emily was such a common name. I hadn't been able to search for her before. But I knew her last name now. Emily Laughlin, I said out loud. I typed her name into the search field, then added Heights Country Day School. To narrow the results. My finger hovered over the return key. After a long moment, I pulled the trigger. I hit enter. An obituary came up, but that was it. No news coverage, no article suggesting that a local Golden Girl had died by suspicious cause. No mention of Grayson or Jameson Hawthorne. There was a picture with the obituary. Emily was smiling this time instead of laughing, and my brain soaked up all the details I'd missed before. Her hair was layered, and she wore it long. The ends curved this way and that, but the rest was silky straight. Her eyes were too big for her face. The shape of her upper lip made me think of a heart. She had a scattering of freckles. Thump, thump, thump. My head shot up at the noise, and I slammed my laptop closed. The last thing I wanted was anyone knowing what I'd just looked up. Thump. This time, I did more than just register the sound. I flipped my bedside lamp on, swung my feet to the floor, and walked towards it. By the time I ended up at the fireplace, I was fairly certain who was on the other side. "Do you ever use doors?" I asked Jameson, once I'd utilized the candlestick to open the passage. Jameson cocked an eyebrow and cocked his head. "Do you want me to use the door?" I felt like what he was really asking was if I wanted him to be normal. I remember sitting beside him at high speed and thought about the climbing wall, and his hand reaching out to catch mine. "I saw your press conference." Jameson had that expression on his face again, the one that made me feel like we were playing chess and he'd just made a move designed to be seen as a challenge. It wasn't so much a press conference as a very bad idea, I admitted wryly. Have I ever told you, Jameson murmured, staring at me in a way that had to be intentional, that I'm a sucker for bad ideas? When he'd shown up here, I'd felt like I'd summoned him by searching for Emily's name. But now I saw this midnight visit for exactly what it was. Jameson Hawthorne was here, in my bedroom, at night. I was wearing my pajamas, and his body was listening toward mine. None of this was an accident. You're not a player, kid. You're the glass ballerina, or the knife. What do you want, Jameson? My body wanted to lean towards him. The rational part of me wanted to step back. You lied to the press. Jameson didn't look away. He didn't blink, and neither did I. What you told them. It was a lie, wasn't it? Of course it was. If I'd known why Tobias Hawthorne left me his fortune, I wouldn't have been working side by side with Jameson to figure it out. I wouldn't have lost my breath when I'd seen that map at the foundation. It's hard to tell with you sometimes, Jameson commented. You're not exactly an open book. He fixed his gaze somewhere in the vicinity of my lips. His face inched toward mine. Never lose your heart to a Hawthorne. Don't touch me, I said. But even as I stepped back, I could feel something. The same something I'd felt when I'd brushed up against Grayson back at the foundation. A thing I had no business feeling, for either of them. Our thrill ride last night paid off, Jameson told me. Getting out of my own head let me look at the puzzle with new eyes. Ask me what I figured out about our middle names. I don't have to, I told him. I solved it too. Blackwood, Westbrook, Davenport, Winchester. They're not just names. They're places. Or at least, the first two are. The Blackwood, the Westbrook. I let myself focus on the puzzle and not the fact that this room was lit only by lamplight, and we were standing too close. I'm not sure about the other two yet, but... Jameson's lips curved upward, his teeth flashing. You'll figure it out. He brought his lips near my ear. We will, Eris. There is no we. Not really. I'm a means to an end for you. I believed that. I did. But somehow what I found myself saying was... Feel like a walk? Chapter 46. This wasn't just a walk, and we both knew it. The Blackwood is enormous. Finding anything there will be impossible if we don't know what we're looking for. Jameson matched his stride, slow and steady, to mine. The brook is easier. It runs most of the length of the property, but I know my grandfather. We're not looking for something in the water. We're looking for something on, or under, the bridge. What bridge? I asked. I caught sight of movement out of the corner of my eye. Orin. He stayed in the shadows, but he was there. The bridge, Jameson replied, where my grandfather proposed to my grandmother. It's near Wayback Cottage. Back in the day, that was all my grandfather owned. As his empire grew, he bought up the surrounding land. He built the house, but always kept up the cottage. The Laughlins live there now, I said, picturing the cottage on the map. Emily's grandparents. I felt guilty even saying her name, but that didn't stop me from watching his response. Did you love her? How did she die? Why does Thea blame your family? Jameson's mouth twisted. Xander said you'd had a little chat with Rebecca, he said finally. No one at school talks to her, I murmured. Correction, Jameson replied. Rebecca doesn't talk to anyone at school. She hasn't for months. He was quiet for a moment, the sound of our footsteps drowning out all else. Rebecca was always the shy one, the responsible one, the one their parents expected to make good decisions. Not Emily, I filled in the blank. Emily... Jameson sounded different when he said her name. Emily just wanted to have fun. She had a heart condition, congenital. Her parents were ridiculously overprotective. They never let her do anything as a kid. She got a transplant when she was 13, and after that, she just wanted to live. Not survive, not just make it through. Live. I thought of the way she'd laughed into the camera, wild and free and a little too canny. Like she'd known when the picture was taken that we'd all be looking at it later. At her. I thought about the way that Skye had described Jameson. Hungry. Did you take her driving? I asked. If I could have taken the question back, I would have, but it hung in the air between us. There is nothing that Emily and I didn't do. Jameson spoke like the words had been ripped out of him. We were the same, he told me, and then he corrected himself. I thought we were the same. I thought about Grayson telling me that Jameson was a sensation seeker. Fear, pain, joy. Which of those had Emily been, for him? What happened to her, I asked. My internet search hadn't yielded any answers. Thea had made it sound like the Hawthorns were somehow to blame, Like Emily had died because she spent time at Hawthorne House. Did she live at the cottage? Jameson ignored my second question and answered the first. Grayson happened to her. I'd known, from the moment I'd said Emily's name in Grayson's presence, that she had mattered to him. But Jameson seemed pretty clear on the fact that he'd been the one involved with her. There was nothing that Emily and I didn't do. What do you mean Grayson happened to her? I asked Jameson. I glanced back, but I couldn't see Oren anymore. Let's play a game, Jameson said darkly, his pace ticking up a notch as we hit a hill. I'll give you one truth about my life and two lies, and it's up to you to decide which is which. Isn't it supposed to be two truths and one lie? I asked. I may not have gone to many parties back home, but I hadn't grown up under a rock. What fun is it, Jameson returned, playing by other people's rules? He was looking at me like he expected me to understand that, understand him. Fact the first, he rattled off. I knew it was in my grandfather's will long before you showed up here. Fact the second. I'm the one that sent Grayson to fetch you. We reached the top of the hill, and I could see a building in the distance, a cottage, and between us, a bridge. Fact the third, Jameson said, standing statue still for the span of a heartbeat. I watched Emily Laughlin die. Chapter 47. I didn't play Jameson's game. I didn't guess which of the things he'd said was true. But there was no mistaking the way his throat had tightened when he'd said those last words. I watched Emily Laughlin die. They didn't tell me what had happened to her. They didn't explain why he told me that Grayson had happened to her. Shall we turn our attention to the bridge, Eris? Jameson didn't make me guess. I wasn't really sure he wanted me to. I forced my focus to the scene in front of us. It was picturesque. There were fewer trees here to block the moonlight. I could make out the way the bridge arced the creek, but not the water below. The bridge was wooden, with railings and balusters that looked like they had been painstakingly handmade. Did your grandfather build this himself? I never met Tobias Hawthorne, but I was starting to feel like I knew him. He was everywhere. In this puzzle, in the house, in the boys. I don't know if he built it. Jameson flashed a Cheshire cat grin, his teeth glinting in the moonlight. But if we're right about this, he almost certainly built something into it. Jameson excelled at pretense, pretending that I'd never asked him about Emily, pretending that he hadn't just told me he'd watched her die, pretending that what happened after midnight stayed in the dark. He walked the length of the bridge. Behind him, I did the same. It was old and a little creaky, but solid as a rock. When Jameson reached the end, he backtracked. His hands stretched out to the sides, fingertips lightly trailing the railings. Any idea what we're looking for? I asked him. I'll know it when I see it. He might as well have said, when I see it, I'll let you know. He'd said that he and Emily were alike, and I couldn't shake the feeling that he wouldn't have expected her to be a passive participant. He wouldn't have treated her as just another part of the game, laid out in the beginning to be useful by the end. I'm a person. I'm capable. I'm here. I'm playing. I took my phone from the pocket of my coat and turned on its flashlight. I made my way back over the bridge, shining the beam on the railing, looking for indentations or a carving. Something. My eyes tracked the nails in the wood, counting them out, mentally measuring the distance between every one. When I finished with the railing, I squatted, inspecting each baluster. Opposite me, Jameson did the same. It felt like we were dancing, a strange midnight dance for two. I'm here. I'll know when I see it. Jameson said again, somewhere between a mantra and a promise. Or maybe I will. I straightened. Jameson looked up at me. Sometimes, Eris, he said, you just need a different point of view. He jumped, and the next thing I knew, he was standing on the railing. I couldn't make out the water down below, but I could hear it. The night air was otherwise silent until Jameson started walking. It was like watching him teeter on the balcony all over again. The bridge isn't that high. The water probably isn't that deep. I turned my flashlight toward him, rising from my crouched position. The bridge creaked beneath me. We need to look below, Jameson said. He climbed to the far side of the railing, balancing on the bridge's edge. Grab my legs, he told me, but before I could figure out where to grab them, or what he was planning to do, he changed his mind. No, I'm too big. You'll drop me. He was back over the railing in a flash. I'll have to hold you. There were a lot of firsts I'd never gotten around to after my mother's death. First dates, first kisses, first times. But this particular first, being dangled off a bridge by a boy who just confessed to watching his last girlfriend die, wasn't exactly on the to-do list. If she was with you, why did you say that Grayson happened to her? Don't drop your phone, Jameson told me, and I won't drop you. His hands were braced against my hips. I was face down, my legs between the balusters, my torso hanging off the bridge's edge. If he let go, I was in trouble. The dangling game. I could almost hear my mom declaring. Jameson adjusted his weight, serving as an anchor for mine. His knee is touching mine. His hands are on me. I felt more aware of my own body, my own skin, than I could ever remember feeling. Don't feel, just look. I flashed my light at the underside of the bridge. Jameson didn't let go. Do you see anything? Shadows, I replied. Some algae. I twisted, arching my back slightly. The blood was rushing to my head. The boards on the bottom aren't the same boards we can see up top, I noted. There's at least 2 layers of wood. I counted the boards. 21. I took another few steps to examine the way the boards met up with the shore, and then I called back. There's nothing here, Jameson. Pull me up. There were 21 boards beneath the bridge, and, based on the count I just completed, 21 on the surface. Everything added up. Nothing was amiss. Jameson paced, but I thought better standing still. Or I would have thought better standing still if I hadn't been watching him pace. He had a way of moving. Unspeakable energy, uncanny grace. It's getting late, I said, averting my gaze. It was always late, Jameson told me. If you were going to turn into a pumpkin, it would have happened by now, Cinderella. Another day, another nickname. I didn't want to read into that. I wasn't even sure what to read into that. We have school tomorrow, I reminded him. Maybe we do. Jameson hit the end of the bridge, turned, and walked back. Maybe we don't. You can play by the rules, or you can make them. I know which I prefer, Eris. Which Emily preferred. I couldn't keep myself from going there. I tried to focus on the moment, the puzzle at hand. The bridge creaked. Jameson kept pacing. I cleared my mind, and the bridge creaked again. Wait. I cocked my head to the side. Stop. Shockingly, Jameson did as I'd commanded. Back up, slowly. I waited, and I listened, and then I heard the creak again. It's the same board. Jameson arrived at that conclusion at the same time I did. Every time. He squatted down to get a better look at it. I knelt, too. The board didn't look different from any of the others. I ran my fingers over it, feeling for something. I wasn't sure what. Beside me, Jameson was doing the same. He brushed against me. I tried not to feel anything, and expected him to pull back, but instead his fingers slid between mine, weaving our hands together, flat on the board. He pressed down. I did the same. The board creaked. I leaned into it, and Jameson began rotating our hands, slowly, from one side of the board to the other. It moves. My eyes darted up toward him, just a little. A little isn't enough. He pulled his fingers slowly back from mine, feather light and warm. We're looking for a latch, something keeping the board from rotating all the way around. Eventually, we found it. Small knots in the wood where the board met up with the balusters. Jameson took the one on the left. I took the one on the right. Moving in synchrony, we pressed. There was a popping sound. When we met back in the middle and tested the board once more, it moved more freely. Together, we rotated it until the bottom of the board faced upward. I shined my flashlight on the wood. Jameson did the same with his. Carved into the surface of the wood was a symbol. Infinity, Jameson said, tracing his thumb over the carving. I tilted my head to the side and took a more pragmatic view. Or 8. Chapter 48. Morning came way too early. Somehow, I dragged myself out of bed and got dressed. I debated if I could get away with skipping hair and makeup, but remembered what Xander had said about telling the story so no one else tells it for you. After what I'd pulled with the press the day before, I couldn't afford to show weakness. As I finished donning what I mentally called my battle face, there was a knock at my door. I answered it and saw the maid who Elisa had told me was one of Nash's. She was carrying a breakfast tray. Mrs. Laughlin hadn't sent one up since my first morning at Hawthorne House. I wondered what I'd done to deserve this one. Our croup deep cleans the house from top to bottom on Tuesdays, the maid informed me once she set up the tray. If it's all right with you, I'll start in your bathroom. Just let me hang up my towel, I said, and the woman stared at me like I'd announced an intention to do naked yoga right there in front of her. You can leave your towel on the floor. We'll be laundering them anyway. That just felt wrong. I'm Avery, I introduced myself, even though she almost certainly knew my name. What's your name?
Melly.
She didn't volunteer more than that. Thank you, Melly. She stared at me blankly. For your help. I thought about the fact that Tobias Hawthorne had kept outsiders out of Hawthorne House as much as possible. And still, there was an entire crew in to clean on Tuesdays. I shouldn't have found that surprising. It should have been more surprising that the entire crew was in here cleaning every day. And yet, I went across the hall to Libby's room because I knew she would get exactly how surreal and uncomfortable this felt. I knocked lightly in case she was still sleeping, and the door drifted inward, just far enough for me to catch sight of a chair and an ottoman, and the man currently occupying them. Nash Hawthorne's long legs were stretched out on the ottoman, his boots still on. A cowboy hat covered his face. He was sleeping. In my sister's room. Nash Hawthorne was sleeping in my sister's room. I made an involuntary sound and stepped back. Nash stirred, then saw me. Hat in hand, he slipped out of the chair and joined me in the hallway. "What are you doing in Libby's room?" I asked him. He hadn't been in her bed, but still. What the hell was the oldest Hawthorne brother doing keeping vigil over my sister? "She's going through something," Nash said, like that was news to me. Like I hadn't been the one to handle Drake the day before. "Libby isn't one of your projects," I told him. I had no idea how much time they'd spent together these past few days. In the kitchen, she'd seemed to find him irritating. "Libby doesn't get irritated. She's a gothic beam of sunshine." "My projects?" Nash repeated, eyes narrowing. "What exactly has Lee been telling you?" His continual use of a nickname for my lawyer only served to remind me that they had been engaged. "He's Elise's ex. He's saved who knows how many members of the staff, and he spent the night in my sister's room." This could not possibly end well. But before I could say that, Melly stepped out of my room. She couldn't be done with the bathroom yet, so she must have heard us. Heard Nash. "Morning," he told her. "Good morning," she said with a smile, and then she looked at me, looked at Libby's room, looked at the open door, and stopped smiling. Chapter 49. Oren met me at the car with a cup of coffee. He didn't say a word about my little adventure with Jameson the night before, and I didn't ask how much he'd observed. As he opened the car door, Oren leaned toward me. "Don't say I didn't warn you." I had no idea what he was talking about until I realized that Elisa was sitting in the front seat. "You're looking sedate this morning," she commented. I took sedate to mean moderately less rash and therefore less likely to evoke a tabloid scandal. I wondered how she would have described the scene I'd stumble across in Libby's room. This is so not good. "I hope you don't have plans for this weekend, Avery," Elisa said as Oren put the car in drive, "or the next weekend." Neither Jameson nor Xander had joined us, which meant that I had absolutely no buffer, and clearly, Elisa was royally pissed. "My lawyer can't ground me, can she?" I thought. "I was hoping to keep you out of the limelight a bit longer," Elisa continued pointedly, "but since that plan has gone out by the wayside, you'll be attending a pink ribbon fundraiser this Saturday night and a game next Sunday." "A game?" I repeated. "NFL," she said curtly. "You own the team." "My hope is that scheduling some high-profile social outings will provide enough grist for the gossip mill that we can delay setting up your first sit-down interview until we've gotten you some real media training." I was still trying to absorb the NFL bombshell when the words "media training" put a knot of dread in my throat. "Do I have to?" "Yes," Elisa told me. "Yes to the gala this weekend, yes to the game next weekend, and yes to the media training." I didn't say another word in complaint. I'd stoked this fire, and protected Libby, knowing that, sooner or later, I'd have to pay the piper. I got so many stares when we'd arrived at school that I found myself questioning whether I had dreamed my last 2 days at Heights Country Day. This is what I expected, back on day one. Just like then, Thea was the first to make a move toward me. "You did a thing," she said in a tone that highly suggested what I'd done was both naughty and delicious. Inexplicably, my mind went to Jameson, to the moment on the bridge when his fingers had woven their way between mine. "Do you really know why Tobias Hawthorne left you everything?" Thea asked, her eyes alight. "The whole school's talking about it." "The whole school can talk about whatever they want." "You don't like me much," Thea noted. "That's okay. I'm a hyper-competitive bisexual perfectionist who likes to win and looks like this. I'm no stranger to being hated." I rolled my eyes. "I don't hate you." I didn't know her well enough to hate her yet. "That's good," Thea replied with a self-satisfied smile. Because we're going to be spending a lot more time with each other. My parents are going out of town. They seem to believe that, left to my own devices, I might do something ill-advised. So I'll be staying with my uncle, and I understand that he and Zara have taken up residence at Hawthorne House. I guess they're not quite ready to cede the family homestead to a stranger. Zara had been playing nice, or at least nicer. But I had no idea that she'd moved in. Then again, Hawthorne House was so gargantuan that an entire professional baseball team could be living there, and I might have no idea. For all I knew, I might own a professional baseball team. Why would you want to stay at Hawthorne House? I asked Thea. She was the one who'd warned me away. Contrary to popular belief, I don't always do what I want. Thea tossed her dark hair over her shoulder. And besides, Emily was my best friend. After everything that happened last year, when it comes to the charms of Hawthorne Brothers, I'm immune. Chapter 50. When I finally got a hold of Max, she wasn't feeling chatty. I could tell that something was wrong, but not what. She didn't have a single fake expletive to share on the topic of Thea moving in, and she cut her back and forth short without any commentary whatsoever on the Hawthorne brothers' physiques. I asked if everything was okay. She said she had to go. Xander, in contrast, was more than willing to discuss the Thea development. If Thea's here, he told me that afternoon, lowering his voice like the walls of Hawthorne House might have ears, she's up to something. She, as in Thea, I asked pointedly, or your aunt? Zara had thrown me together with Grayson at the foundation, and now she was moving Thea into the house. I recognized someone stacking the board, even if I couldn't see the play underneath. You're right, Xander said. I seriously doubt Thea volunteered to spend time with our family. It is possible that she fervently wishes for vultures to dine upon my entrails. You? I said. These issues with the Hawthorne brothers had seemed to revolve around Emily, and that meant, I had assumed, around Jameson and Grayson. What did you do? It is a story, Xander said with a sigh, involving star-crossed love, fake dating, tragedy, penance, and possibly vultures. I thought back to asking Xander about Rebecca Laughlin. He hadn't said anything to indicate she was Emily's sister. He remembered almost exactly what he'd said about Thea. Xander didn't let me ruminate for long. Instead, he dragged me off to what he declared to be his fourth favorite room in the house. If you're going to be going head-to-head with Thea, he told me, you need to be prepared. I'm not going head-to-head with anyone, I said firmly. It is adorable that you believe that. Xander stopped where one corridor met another. He reached up, all 6'3" of him, to touch a molding that ran up the corner. He must have hit some kind of release, because the next thing I knew, he was pulling the molding toward us, revealing a gap behind it. He stuck his hand into the gap behind the molding, and a moment later, a portion of the wall swung out toward us like a door. I was never going to get used to this. Welcome to my lair. Xander sounded overjoyed to be saying those words. I stepped into his lair and saw a machine? Contraption would probably have been the more accurate term. There were dozens of gears, pulleys, and chains, a complicated series of connected ramps, several buckets, two conveyor belts, a slingshot, a birdcage, four pinwheels, and at least four balloons. Is that an anvil? I asked, frowning and leaning forward for a better look. That, Xander said proudly, is a Rube Goldberg machine. And as it so happens, I am a 3-time world champion at building machines that do simple things in overly complicated ways. He handed me a marble. Place this in the pinwheel. I did. The pinwheel spun, blowing a balloon that tipped a bucket. As I watched each mechanism set off the next, I glanced at the youngest Hawthorne brother out of the corner of my eye. What does this have to do with Thea moving in? He told me that I needed to be prepared, then brought me here. Was this supposed to be some kind of metaphor? A warning that Zara's actions made appear complicated, even when the goal was simple? An insight into Thea's charge? Xander cast a sideways look at me and grinned. Who said this had anything to do with Thea? Chapter 51. That night, in honor of Thea's visit, Mrs. Laughlin made a melt-in-your-mouth roast beef, orgasmic garlic mashed potatoes, roasted asparagus, broccoli florets, and 3 different kinds of creme brulee. I couldn't help feeling like it was pretty revealing that Mrs. Laughlin had pulled out all the stops for Thea, but not for me. Trying not to seem petty, I sat down to a formal dinner in the dining room, which probably should have been called a banquet hall instead. The massive table was set for 11. I cataloged the participants in this little family dinner. 4 Hawthorne brothers, Skye, Zara and Constantine, Thea, Libby, Nan, and me. Thea, Zara said, her voice almost too pleasant. How is field hockey? We're undefeated this season. Thea turned toward me. Have you decided which sport you'll be playing, Avery? I managed to resist the urge to snort, but barely. I don't do sports. Everyone at Country Day does a sport, Xander informed me, before stuffing his mouth with roast beef. His eyes rolled upward with pleasure as he chewed. It is an actual, real requirement, and not just a figment of Thea's delightfully vindictive imagination. Xander, Nash said in warning. I said she was delightfully vindictive, Xander replied innocently. If I were a boy, Thea told him with a Southern Belle smile, people would just call me driven. Thea, Constantine frowned at her. Right. Thea dabbed at her lips with her napkin. No feminism at the dinner table. This time I couldn't bite back the snort. Point Thea. A toast, Skye declared out of nowhere, holding up her wine glass and slurring the words enough that it was clear she'd already been imbibing. Skye, dear, Nan said firmly, have you considered sleeping it off? A toast, Skye reiterated, glass still held high, to Avery. For once, she'd gotten my name right. I waited for the guillotine to drop, but Skye said nothing else. Zara raised her glass. One by one, every other glass went up. Every person in this room had probably gotten the message. No good could come of challenging the will. I might have been the enemy, but I was also the one with the money. Is that why Zara brought Thea here? To get close to me? Is that why she left me alone with the foundation with Grayson? To you, Eris, Jameson murmured to my left. I turned to look at him. I hadn't seen him since the night before. I was fairly certain he'd skipped school. I wondered if he'd spent the day in the Blackwood, looking for the next clue. Without me. To Emily, Thea said suddenly, her glass still raised, her eyes on Jameson. May she rest in peace. Jameson's glass came down. His chair was pushed roughly back from the table. Farther down, Grayson's fingers tightened around the stem of his own glass, his knuckles going white. Theodora, Constantine hissed. Thea took a drink and adopted the world's most innocent expression. What? Everything in me wanted to follow Jameson, but I waited a few minutes before excusing myself. Like that would keep any of them from knowing exactly where I was going. In the foyer, I pressed my hand flat against the wall panels, hitting the sequence designed to reveal the coat closet door. I needed my coat if I was going to venture off into the Blackwood. I was sure this was where Jameson had gone. As my hand hooked around the hanger, a voice spoke up from behind me. I'm not going to ask you what Jameson is up to, what you're up to. I turned to face Grayson. You're not going to ask me, I repeated, taking in the set of his jaw and those canny silver eyes, because you already know. I was there last night, at the bridge. There were edges in Grayson's tone, not rough, but sharp. This morning I went to see the Red Will. I still have the decoder, I pointed out, trying not to read anything into the fact that he'd seen his brother and me at the bridge, and didn't sound happy about it. Grayson shrugged, his shoulders pulling against the confines of his suit. Red acetate is easy enough to come by. If he'd seen the Red Will, he knew that their middle names were clues. I wondered if his mind had gone immediately to their father's. I wondered if that had hurt him the way it hurt Jameson. You were there last night, I said, echoing back what he'd told me, at the bridge. How much had he seen? How much did he know? What had he thought when Jameson and I had touched? Westbrook, Davenport, Winchester, Blackwood. Grayson took a step toward me. They're last names, but they're also locations. I found the clue on the bridge after you and my brother had gone. He followed us there. He found what we'd found. What do you want, Grayson? If you were smart, he warned softly, you'd stay away from Jameson, from the game. He looked down. From me. Emotion slashed across his features, but he masked it before I could tell what exactly he was feeling. Thea's right, he said sharply, turning away from me, walking away from me. This family, we destroy everything we touch.